You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hi and welcome to A's Plus, the San Francisco Chronicle's podcast on the Oakland A's and Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Chronicle A's beat writer Matt Kawahara, and our guest today is Tony Kemp. The utility man was just named the A's nominee for the prestigious Roberto Clemente Award, and he's been a consistent contributor for Oakland all season. He joins us to talk about his ongoing efforts with his Plus One Effect initiative, which he started last year to spark civil discourse about race and the Players Alliance, as well as the A's playoff push. That and more now on A's Plus. Tony, thanks a lot for joining us. And first of all, I mean, congratulations on the nomination for the Clemente Award, which is obviously a very prestigious award for MLB. Second year in a row that you have been the A's nominee. What does that mean to you? What does that signify to you?
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about it earlier, and you know, I feel like in my career and dating back since college, you know, there's been a lot of accolades and a lot of awards, and the Roberto Clemente Award is number one for me. You know, just kind of shows you like what you do to give back the community, and it encompasses so many things. And yeah, just very blessed, very humble just to be on the, you know, same sentence as Roberto Clemente. It means a lot.
I would say it covers a lot of ground, both with on-field performance and then also just the efforts that you put in off the field. We've, you know, written in the past, and you've talked about the work that you do with the Plus One Effect, which you started. Would you kind of tell us where that is right now and what you guys are kind of doing with through the Plus One Effect at this point?
Yeah, so it's just about having a conversation about race with someone who wants to learn and better themselves about the topic. And yeah, like I said, the Plus One has exceeded all expectations that I've even, you know, once it started to being, I knew it was a big deal once I did my interview with the New York Times. And then, man, it's still ongoing. You know, people are still asking questions in my DMs about race to this day. And, you know, I think it's good to keep the conversation going. I didn't want it to just be a hot topic, because it's more than that. So it's still continuous. It's still in a work of progress of, you know, everybody trying to better themselves to take a step out of their shoes and see if they could live in someone else's shoes and see how they feel. And the Plus One Effect's all about having conversations with someone else and in a positive way, to where you could spread awareness and spread positivity through you know, other people and how they feel about race. So it's been good.
What would you say is like kind of what you're working toward with that? Obviously you're sort of balancing this right now between doing that and the responsibilities that that go into, you know, playing a baseball season. But is there an end goal for that that project?
Yeah, I hope that there's not an end goal, because then that means the work's done. Yeah, I think it's just going to be one of those things that is just continuous. I don't see an end goal in it. I see it as a, you know, I think it's going to be one of those things to where, you know, the customized cleats that I have, it's going to be always on my cleats. Just, you know, you never know when someone might look it up. I get asked all the time when I'm on deck what the Plus One Effect is, and if it's usually from an older crowd, but I've heard a couple people, younger crowd, kind of knows what the Plus One Effect is. And I think the coolest thing is to walk around to different stadiums, and we're in Detroit, there's three or four fans that had the Plus One Effect shirt on, and I was like, wow, that's huge. So the reach is huge, and so you know, like I said, it's exceeded all the expectations I had when I started it.
I was gonna say, you see the shirts quite a bit. I mean, not only in Oakland, but yeah, like you said, you see them on the road. For you, what has been maybe the, I guess to this point, the most rewarding part of doing that whole thing?
Well, I'll say there was a time when we were playing the Giants this season, and after one of the day games that we won, a fan came up to me and said, "Hey, I would just love to, you know, shake your hand for everything that you've done." You know, he's like, "I can't believe I'm actually talking to you right now." He was like, "But I just want to say thank you for everything that you done on the off the field, with all the conversations that's been going on." And I was kind of thinking, I was like, man, I wonder how long the line would be if every person could say that to me or to my wife or to, you know, this initiative. And, you know, the line, I think, would be pretty freaking long. So, yeah.
And the initiative, part of it is, you know, the shirts is fundraising. Where do the funds go to? What are you guys doing with the funds that are raised through the bus?
Yeah, so we've actually kind of switched it up. It was going to Gideon's Army in Nashville, and then we are going to switch it to a there was a positive coaching thing that we're actually working out with San Francisco right now to figure out if we can start having the money go to, like, more of a community that's toward Oakland. So it's actually been donated. The proceeds have been going to a bunch of different organizations. So we got to iron a little more things out. But I wish it was black and white as it could be. But it's not like that. You got to figure out who you're going to get it through. The 501c, and there's a lot that goes into it. But I wouldn't change it for anything.
When you think through sort of some of the conversations and the interactions that you've had with people just through this, and obviously a big reason for doing this was to kind of, like you say, generate a dialogue, but also kind of open other people's eyes. Have there been any talks that have sort of been eye-opening for you too, or like expanded sort of your horizons and stuff?
Yeah, I think the coolest thing about the initiative is how much I've learned of just, like, you know, you can never stop learning. You know, you don't know everything in the world. And I think the one conversation that stuck with me was, you know, a woman was talking about how could she help, and she was a white suburban mom in an area that, you know, she wasn't around many people of color. And you know, I just told her it starts with their inner circle and, you know, go from there. And that conversation kind of stuck with me because I learned that, you know, even though you're not around it, you know, you still can, people who are making fun of it or people who are talking bad about it, you know, you're gonna have to be the one that steps up. And, you know, I told people that you might lose friends talking about it, but you know what I mean, like, you know, at least you're bettering, you know, yourself. And, you know, you said your honest truth. And at the end of the day, I've lost a couple of friends through it too. And, you know, that's a part of growing up, though. You're not gonna agree with everybody. So, but it's been going well.
Yeah. You're also involved in the Players Alliance, which has done a lot of work to grow baseball in underserved communities and communities where baseball maybe isn't as popular or isn't as accessible.
Yeah.
How would you describe or qualify the efforts that organization has done and sort of what progress has been made there?
Oh, man. I mean, I think MLB and the Players Alliance just agreed to $10 million a year, some type of donation for the next 5 years or something like that. I mean, or next 10 years, I think. But, yeah, that just goes to show you how much guys like Curtis Granderson, CC Sabathia, Edwin Jackson, how much those guys really care about growing the game, especially with, you know, in the black community, and being able to provide these, you know, pieces of equipment to people who maybe can't afford it. And, you know, I think one thing that stuck with me is I was talking with Curtis Granderson. He said, you know, there's going to come a time where there's going to be a black kid in the community that gets a piece of, like, a glove or a bat or some cleats, and he's going to make it to the big leagues, and he's going to say, I remember at the pull-up tour when I got my first pair. And, you know, and that, even if it's one person, like, that's what it's all about, is, like, giving back in that way. And to be a part of it's awesome. I get to talk to all these guys who have obviously had great successes in the game, and also talk to them, you know, through Instagram messages, been able to talk to CC about the mental side and the adversities of baseball and how you deal with the stresses and all these different things that, you know, it's almost like killing two birds with one stone, it almost feels like. And yeah, they've done a lot for the game, and I, you know, it's not over yet.
One thing that you did, I know, was I think address was a local little league team or just like some little league athletes. Like,
yeah.
I know that A's had mentioned that. What did you? What was your message, or what did you say?
So got a picture, and they said, "Hey, our team name is the Plus One Effect," and I was like, "Man, that is so freaking cool!" Like, you know, to have a sponsor to be able to do that, and I can't even put it into words how cool it is. And you know, people might think it's like a lot of work or it's, you have to do this. And honestly, like, my agency's helped me out with so much of it. The Ballinger Groups have been, they're out of Dallas. They've been tremendous in helping me do all this stuff. My wife's been, you know, tremendous. And because, you know, there's a certain line where you have to kind of cut it off and say, hey, I'm at the field, I need to concentrate on this. And but honestly, like, people ask me about it, and I said, man, giving back honestly feels natural. It feels like, not that it has to be done, but it's just like, yeah, I feel like you don't have this platform forever, you know, so why not capitalize on helping people who can't really help you back, right? So
was that the Plus One Effect team, was that a Bay Area based team or was that from someplace else?
The Plus One Effect, they were in Tennessee. Yeah.
Which is where you're from, Franklin.
Where I'm from, yeah.
And I know that I think the Franklin School District kind of shouted you out also.
Yeah, the FSSD, the best school district in Tennessee.
We'll be right back with more with Tony Kemp after this. And remember, you can access all of our A's coverage and more with a subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. Go to sfchronicle.com/pod. That's sfchronicle.com/pod.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you were growing up, did baseball always feel pretty accessible to you, or what was your route into the sport, I guess?
Definitely my brother. Yeah. I was just the little brother that followed big brother around, and he played basketball, I played basketball, baseball. We played three sports for the longest time. I played three sports up until my sophomore year of high school, and then baseball was kind of like, okay, I'm not going to go to the NBA. I'm not gonna be a running back in the NFL, so I think that I kind of gravitated toward baseball more because I feel like I saw more of a future in it. And then once I signed to Vandy, I was like, okay, I think that there's a pretty good chance that, you know, I could make something of this. So now here we are.
And your brother's still an influence. I mean, you referenced him earlier this season with one of the home runs that you had, I think it was against the Yankees.
Yeah, he wants to get into coaching one day. He's got three kids, so he's trying to figure out when he could do that. But right now he's coaching his son's little league team, so he's enjoying it. But he knows a lot about the game. He's very knowledgeable, and you know, be able to bounce stuff off him is pretty cool still.
Well, just to shift gears a little bit, I mean, you guys are obviously in the midst of a playoff push here coming in the last few weeks of the season. How the last several weeks, I guess, or maybe month or so, probably hasn't gone as you guys would have hoped coming to the end here. But how would you sort of describe where you guys are right now?
Yeah, I think, I mean, no doubt about it, we definitely could be in a better spot. But I think, you know, we've kind of put ourselves in a place of we need to win and nothing else matters. And how many games are left?
I want to say 18 at this point.
18 games left? 18 games left. Got to go 18-0. That's kind of how it is. But no, you can't get too ahead of yourself. You just got to go 1-0. And I think the good thing about it is the clubhouse morale is still the same. And you have a certain respect for this game because you know how hard it is, and you know you're playing at the highest level. And you know, things aren't always going to go your way. We're still human. And the thing about today is it's brand new, and we have a fresh 9 today. So hopefully we can get some runs and get a win.
When you look around, do you see the same amount of confidence as maybe like a month ago or 2 months ago or at the beginning of the season from this game?
Yeah, I honestly think it's, you know, if it's not high right now, then it's pretty much the same. I think, you know, there's a lot of guys who have been in that playoff atmosphere and, you know what it takes to get there. So there's no surprise in that regard. I just think that, you know, baseball is ugly. It's ugly and it's beautiful at the same time.
When you look at your season, I think we talked back in Seattle in something like May or June, and
Colorado?
Might have been Colorado, and you'd had a really good kind of stretch to bring your on-base percentage up, and you said something like coming into the season you really made a focus on looking for a certain pitch, I mean, and kind of selling out for that pitch and just not trying to be defensive when you're at the plate.
For sure.
Is that something that you've continued throughout the year? Because looking at the on-base percentage that you've compiled over the course of the year, it's, aside from a little bit of a lull mid-season, it has stayed pretty strong.
I think just talking with approach and talking with Jed Lowry, I mean, we pretty much have the same approach. And, you know, I never like to really get off the fastball. You know, if a guy wants to sit up there and throw me 3 or 4 off-speed pitches and get himself in a disadvantaged count and then have to throw a fastball, then that's kind of when I take advantage. And I think the biggest thing this year is just being able to get your pitch and don't miss it, and just being confident in yourself. And, you know, this is the most volume I've got in my big league career, and I feel like I've felt like this is what the production that I could give if I was given a certain amount of time, you know, to get everyday at-bats or to get at-bats, you know, more than just, you know, two starts a week. And, you know, even in the role I'm in now, I just think that, you know, people are, whatever it is, I know how good I am. I just know that given the volume, I know that, you know, something like a year like this could happen.
When you say that, like, you and Jed Lowry, like, you have a similar approach,
yeah,
does that mean you're similar hitters, or can different types of hitters have a similar approach?
Yeah, every hitter has a different approach, but, you know, it's the cliche, all right, sit fastball and adjust off speed, and you always hear that approach. And, you know, talking with Jed, that was one of the things that he was like, just picking his brain in spring training, hey, man, what's your approach? What do you look for? And he's like, I mean, I've always sat on a heater and adjusted off speed, because that is the – going back to the drawing board, I mean, if you're geared up for 98 and he throws 88, you're going to be ready for the 88. But if you're geared up for 88 and he throws 98, you're not going to touch it. So I feel like just having that approach, keeping it simple, hitting the positive top part of the baseball, and, you know, that's pretty much it. I mean, I feel like just being able to keep things simple has been the best thing for me.
Does it make more sense to do that now, even just because of the way that velocity plays right now in the major league, just because you see fast, like, everybody throws mid to high 90s.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I think the biggest jump, just being able to handle velocity. But I mean, I think everybody can kind of go and look at the data of what hitters had to go through with the sticky stuff. And, you know, you see people's spin rates falling, and you just have to understand that when you're hitting and these heaters are a spin rate of almost 3,000, it's like, it almost would look like if the ball was coming out at his shoelaces and ending up at your chest. Like, the perceived velocity and the perceived extension is just ridiculous. So now to see what the numbers have been in dealing with all that stuff, now I feel like, now you're seeing the home runs. Now you're seeing, like, okay, these hitters aren't as bad as we thought they were. You know, it's I feel like it's finally getting back to that true baseball. You know, people are getting checked, and I think it's good for the game.
I mean, that seemed like such a big story for the kind of few weeks leading up to it.
Yeah.
And then there was a just kind of swarm, and then it seemed like it went away a little bit.
Yeah.
But has there been a lasting effect from the hitter's perspective?
Oh yeah, I mean, go look at everyone's numbers this year. Like, when these pitchers had this sticky stuff, it was making, like, pitchers that, you know, maybe have like a 5 or 6 a year ago start using sticky stuff, he's got a 2 or 3, you know. And so you know, I'm sure you guys saw all the articles about spin rate and all that stuff and the decrease and the decline. And it's like, you know, that's why there's a high foul ball rate, because when you're hitting and the guy has all, like, sticky stuff and he's throwing a heater, and it looks like it's one place and you look down and it's not. It's, you know, it's, so pretty much you would have to swing over fastballs. And it was like, what? Like, but that's in, you know, to survive that era of just like the sticky stuff, like, you got to think about the hitters who couldn't survive that time and make that adjustment of, all right, a guy has a spin rate heater of 2800. My aiming point has to be here on a heater rather than here. And, you know, off speed pitches were even better, right? Like, you guys are seeing this stuff. So, yeah, I just feel like, I'm happy that it's getting policed.
Actually, the way that you describe that, I specifically remember Matt Chapman on one of the early season Zooms, because we were still on Zoom with the players, describing it that way, where he had to learn to swing above where he thought a pitch was going to be, which I thought was a really eye-opening thing. But I don't know how long that had been going on. Like, how long had you had to hit like that?
Well, I remember back in 2018 learning about it and learning about spin rate heaters, because, you know, you get that one fastball, you don't want to miss it, right? So that's why you'd see so many guys clip foul balls back behind them or back that way. And it's because, you know, as that ball's coming in, what the Revolutions were able to do is just, like, it was able to pretty much rise up a little more than what you thought it was. And obviously we're up here trying to hit a round ball, round bat, you know, it's hard to do. So I think it was back in 2018 is when I kind of first heard about it, and then that's when I started paying attention to hitters or pitchers' RPM. So all our scouting reports, whenever we're going up to the plate, there's a spot that says fastball, what is his spin rate, RPMs. And it's usually like a guy's 2,000, like, okay, that's a pretty standard teeter. But yeah, it's like 23, 24, okay, then that means you have to kind of make sure you really concentrate on staying on top of the ball even more, because, you know, you stay on top of the ball even more, that's what kind of gives that swing path, you know, the direction that you want.
The other thing that stood out, at least in the first half for you, was it seemed like you were being more selective just generally at the plate.
Oh, yeah.
What led into that, and is that something you're going to carry forward just in terms of, like, being more selective?
Yeah, when I was coming up, we had this hitting coach named Daryl Robinson, and one of his things was we all wanted, like, he always preached, be selectively aggressive. And, you know, it's funny how you write things down in a journal and it comes back to you, and those are the things that you kind of build your approach around. And being selectively aggressive is something that always rings in the back of my head. Is, you know, obviously you want to get a good pitch, but you want to be aggressive, because that's the swing that's gonna, you get to do damage on. And yeah, I think it's just an approach. I've just been super simple this year. I don't have a big swing. It's very compact. It's very short. It's very boring, as you know what I mean. It's you know, I get up there and that's my stance. My load is simple, but you know, I feel like I've been able to stay around the big leagues for as long as I've had is because I just know who I am. And I like I said, we talked about trying to do two-hand finish and add exit velocity, and like, yeah, I hit a couple home runs, but I also struck out at like a 20% clip, and I was like, all right, that's not who I am. So at the end of the day, I can say I tried.
So was this an important year for you, just kind of like get more comfortable with who you are as a hitter, who you are as a player, would you say?
Yeah, and obviously super blessed that the A's gave me some volume to work with and to be able to mix in with some of these guys. And I feel like this year, having the year I am, I mean, you have to manifest all this stuff and put out in the universe and say every year is a big year, every year is going to be a good year. And I feel like that's kind of what happened. And, you know, I wouldn't mind being an A for a couple more years, not going to lie.
Last thing I want to ask you about, being that we're in Kansas City right now, the Negro Leagues Museum is here, and I understand you guys went and visited a couple of days ago, a couple guys from the team. Was that the first time that you had been, and what were your sort of impressions of touring?
Yeah, that was the first time I'd been, and my impressions was, you know, I know that how just what those guys went through to be able to play the game that I love today is they went through a lot. And, you know, I went with Chris Davis, Mark Canna, and we also went with Josh Harrison. So it was the tour guide was unbelievable. He, you know, the whole place was shut down. We got like a private tour, and yeah, you got to go.
Were there things that you learned or saw there that even resonated still today, or you feel like that it was still familiar, I guess, in a sense?
Yeah, just the amount of money that they have, you know, spending $1 a day, $2 a day, and Hank Aaron getting on a train and him cross hitting with his opposite hands when he's hitting, and all the stories. And I feel like I just learned, just I think it was just being able to see it visually. I'm a visual learner, and just to see it visually it was eye-opening, you know. And like I said, you got to definitely pay respects to those guys, because I wouldn't be here without them.
Well, when you're in Kansas City next time, you gotta check it out.
You gotta check it out.
Well, Tony Kemp, thank you so much for taking out the time and for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Our thanks again to Tony Kemp for joining us today on A's Plus. Our producers today were G. Allen Johnson and King Kaufman. We'll be back with more soon on A's Plus. Thanks for listening.